Topi channa pala pa gravare dhari Nishoda nandana vraja jana ranjana Nishoda nandana vraja jana ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanita Hari Yamuna Tira Vanita Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjari Hari
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Prabhupada Sutera Sutta Shri Shimdi Zarangai Sesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Kijai Krishna Founder Charya Shri Prabhupada Kijai Samaveda Bhakti Jindi Kijai Gaura Premananda All glories to Simha devotees Glories to Simha devotees All glories to Simha devotees All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Garanga Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sagadavaya Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda Namasa Sarasadavaya Gaura Vanakachana Nivashesha Shunyapari Pasta Chavasatana Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So not actually today, but tomorrow is Labor Day, as Mother Mukhya mentioned. It's a big holiday in America, so I'd like to give my annual Labor Day address. I don't know if it's annual, but... So today's verse is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually, and I think as we read Srila Prabhupada's very, very wonderful purport, you'll understand how this applies to the discussion of Labor Day. So, I'll just go through the verse in purport. You can chant along if you want. Pabhyang bhagavato jagne shushrusha dharma siddhaye kasyam jata parashudro yadvritya tushite hari. Thereafter, service was manifested from the legs of the personality of Godhead for the sake of perfecting a religious function. Situated on the legs are the sudras who satisfy the Lord by service. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Service is the real constitutional occupation of all living entities. The living entities are meant to render service to the Lord, and they can attain religious perfection by this service attitude. One cannot attain religious perfection simply by speculating to attain theoretical knowledge. The Jnani division of spiritualists go on speculating only to distinguish the soul from matter, but they have no information of the activity of the soul after being liberated by knowledge. It is said that persons who only mentally speculate to know things as they are and who not engage in transcendental loving service of the Lord are simply wasting their time. It is clearly said here that the principle of service is generated from the legs of the Lord for the sake of perfecting the religious process. But this transcendental service is different from the idea of service in the material world. In the material world, no one wants to be a servant. Everyone wants to become the master, because this false mastership is the basic disease of a conditioned soul. The conditioned soul in the material world wants to lord it over others. Illusioned by the external energy of the Lord, he is forced to become a servant of the material world. That is the real position of the conditioned soul. It is actually better to be a Shudra than to be a Brahmin and not develop a service attitude, because that attitude alone satisfies the Lord. Every living being, even if he be a Brahmin by qualification, must take to the transcendental service of the Lord. Even if one is not a perfect Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, but takes to the service of the Lord, not caring for the perfection of his social position, he becomes a perfect human being simply by developing the attitude of service to the Supreme Lord. Om Ajnana Kundandisha Gnanjana Samakaya Chaksur Mikamyanga Tasma Sri Gurve Namaha Panchakalpathyubhishcha Kripa Sindhubhivicha Patitano Pavanebhya Vaishyavirva Namo Namaha Jaya Prabhupada. It's very wonderful purport that of Srila Prabhupada's, where he really clearly explains the position of devotional service and the superiority of the attitude of service in the heart, and how that surpasses any material designation or any particular position that one might be in. So this particular verse is in a chapter that's describing the different orders of life and religious principles, and the Shudras are mentioned here. And of course, the Shudra is the laboring class. So there's a natural division in every society. It's not that the vague system artificially said, okay, we have laborers, we have... No, we find it everywhere. There are those who are workers, there are those that are managers, those that are business people, those that are farmers, and those that are intellectuals or teachers or religious leaders in every society. You can't find any society in the world that doesn't have some kind of division like that. It's just a natural thing because people are different and have different propensities. But the point that's being made here is that all of these, doesn't matter what class a person is, whether he's from a Shudra, a working class, or whether he's a great Brahmin, a great intellectual religious leader, if he does not have this attitude of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it is actually the religious sentiment in one's heart and the manifestation of that sentiment through practical service that makes one an advanced human being. Not any particular position or caste or creed or, you know, any particular social, economic situation. So this is a very, very important lesson that Srila Prabhupada is giving us here. And further, Srila Prabhupada is explaining what is the eternal spiritual position of every one of us who are living entities, who are Atma, who are the spirit soul within this material world currently in these material bodies. Our real position is that we are the eternal servants of God. So our practice of Krishna consciousness is called Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga means devotional service. Prabhupada always included service in his description of the devotional practice that we do. And in fact, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clearly outlined this. And this was, of course, in his very, very beginning of his teachings to Sanatana Goswami, when he described the position of the living entity. He said, Jivera Sarubhoya Krishnara Nachidas Krishnara Tadashti Shakti Veda Veda Bhakash. Majum 20-108. It is the living entity's constitutional position to be an eternal servant of Krishna, because he is the marginal energy of Krishna and a manifestation simultaneously one with and different from the Lord, like a molecular particle of sunshine or fire. This is a very packed verse, and we could spend a long time dissecting all the wonderful elements in it. But the idea I wanted to get to here was mainly the constitutional position. Now, what is constitutional? This idea of sarup, jivera sarup aya. Sarup means the constitutional position of the jiva, us, the living entity, the soul within this body. Constitutional position means who we are in our original pure state. What is, who are we really? What is the real personality behind all of these coverings, behind the particular bodily form, the particular mind that we have like that? And we take this back, back, and back. Before we were in any body in this material world, what is the essence? That essence is our Sanatana Dharma, our constitutional position, our sarup, and that is Krishnara Nichidas, eternal servant of Krishna. Krishnara Nityadas. So, default position, yeah. It's like Prabhupada said, it means that which cannot ever be taken away. Like Prabhupada said, like we had that, you have a quality of water, which is liquidity. You have a quality of fire, which is heat and light. You can't have fire without heat and light. Well, I mean, maybe you could concoct some way, but basically, in other words, these are eternal positions. This is you said default position. That's a good way of putting it. In other words, it is the essence, that which cannot be taken away from. Prabhupada sometimes described it. So the essence of the jiva, of the atma, the soul, which cannot be taken away, is service to God, a relationship with God of loving devotional service, of bhakti. That's our original pure state. So now, returning to Labor Day. If the constitutional position is to be an eternal servant, what is Labor Day about? Well, it's a day off from work and school. It's the last big holiday of the summer. For most people, it's just another holiday. But actually, it started in the late 1800s, and it was considered to be a tribute to the accomplishment of the workers. Now, in reality, it was an attempt to curb unrest among workers. This was a time in our history in America when the Industrial Revolution was really getting going in full swing. Labor was starting to get a little bit, wait a minute, why are we working 16 hours a day for nothing, you know, and the owner of the factory is making millions of dollars. So, you know, there was a lot of this unrest between the classes. So, in other words, it's kind of to pacify. But let's give a holiday for the working people, for the laborers, you know, to give them a little encouragement. You know, but at any rate, there it was. So, this idea of labor or work and sort of a glorification of work or labor is really a reflection of the spiritual principle of service, which is glorious. Now, a devotee doesn't really usually call what we do work, do we? We don't say it's our job. Well, I got to go to work. I've got to go on the altar and address the deities. You know, we don't use those terms, do we? We don't call it work. We don't call it our job. We usually talk about it as service or seva or bhakti. You know, there's words like this that we use. You know, very devotional terms, very respectful terms, and terms that show that we have great reverence for and appreciation for that opportunity. We see service as an opportunity, not as something we are forced to do. So I want to talk a little bit today about this contrast between the idea of work or labor in the material world and devotional service. Okay? So Another aspect of this is that service is a primary aspect of this loving relationship with God. We talked about that, the constitutional position. And it's not just a theoretical construct. Prabhupada said that service and love are closely linked together. I can't just say, I love you, I love you, I love you, but I don't ever want to do anything for you. You know. But, oh, could you do this for me? No. No. But you said you love me. Yeah, I love you, but I'm not going to do anything for you. It almost doesn't make sense, does it? I mean, we've even in the material world, we tend to equate love with some idea. There's an exchange, right? There's a relationship. You know, there's give and take. There's you do something for the other person out of that love. You manifest that love through activity, through service. Right? If possible, you try to do that. So, I was thinking of some ideas of how we contrast this idea of work and devotional service. First of all, in the material world, on Labor Day, people celebrate labor by not laboring, right? By taking a day off. In other words, we celebrate, yes, the laborers are great, so let's not do any work, you know, as a way of celebrating that. Now, I guess it makes sense in a way, but it's sort of ironic, isn't it? It shows that we really would rather not work. Right? Because we want a holiday where we don't have to work. Interestingly, now devotees, when we have a holiday, we try to increase our service, right? Whenever we have an appearance day of Krishna, Radharani, or one of the Acharyas, we always say, this is a good opportunity to hear more, to chant more, right? To increase service, or everybody come help cut up in the kitchen, or help with the feast, or in other words, and especially, I remember, it seemed like I know you hate to hear us old guys talk about the old days, you know, back 50 years ago and all that. But, you know, I remember so many festivals, where that's when we had a lot of devotees. Most of us actually lived in the temple as residents. You know, there weren't so many people living outside. And now everybody lives outside. Then it was kind of the opposite. But at a festival, we all just work so hard to put it all together, to cook everything, to, you know, make everything happen. And it was great. It was fun. We didn't say, oh, gosh, got to go to work, got to get this festival together. No, we thought, wow, this is going to be great. We're going to have, we have this opportunity. We were also 40 years younger, too. We had a lot of energy, but which is good. Now, we hopefully, that same attitude has become mature, and what we can't do so much physically, we can hopefully do on a higher plane of awareness and consciousness. But at any rate, there's always so much service there was to do for festivals, and it was very ecstatic. You know, I was at two or three temples when Srila Prabhupada was coming to visit, and it was just an incredible amount of activity that went on, and anybody who's in that situation probably remembers, you know, all of a sudden, you know, rooms that were looking dingy for years got painted freshly, and, you know, so many things were done, and everything was gotten ready, and the whole temple looked sparkling like that, and we were just so excited about it. It wasn't like, you know, there was any... And if someone had an opportunity to do some service for Srila Prabhupada, so they fought, people, we fought over it, you know, it was practically like, you know, who gets the opportunity to do... It wasn't like, all right, who's going to do the laundry? Who has to clean his room today? No, it's like, can I please do it? That's the difference between devotional service. Devotional service is done with love, not because one has to do it or, you know, is compelled to do it. So that brings us to my next point. In the material conception of life, work is usually only done for a material reward. And generally, one wants to decrease that work. One wants to get the most reward for the less effort. So the labor movement was always wanting to get more and more, you know, better hours, less, which wasn't really a bad thing because they really were overworked and exploited a lot in the beginning, you know, child labor, 12 hours a day in a factory, things like that. So I'm not saying it was, you know, that they weren't justified. But still, but the idea was people, you know, wanted less hours, more holidays, less work, and more money. And would people continue their jobs if they weren't paid for it? Not really, would they? You might say, well, but everybody has to make a living, everyone has to eat. What about if people always say, what would you do if you won the lottery? Well, most people would say they quit their job, right? They would stop working. They don't want to work. They only work for the money. If they had the money and a way of not working, they would certainly take it, for the most part. There's a few people who perhaps really like their work, are very satisfied, and have a fulfilling, stimulating job. But many, many people do not. Now, devotees, on the other hand, we try to increase our service even without pay or reward. And one of the best examples of this, that probably many of you are familiar with these verses in the seventh pamphlet of Srimad Bhagavatam by Prahlad Maharaj. One of his ones, he says, this is 7:10:4, I think, you are so kind to your devotees that you could not induce them to do anything unbeneficial for him. On the other hand, one who desires some material benediction in exchange for devotional service cannot be your pure devotee. Indeed, he is no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. Oh, my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master, I'm naturally your servant, and we have no other relationship. And also remember, Prahlad Maharaj, he's called Maharaj because he was basically a king of the universe after his father was put away. He's king of the universe. He says, I am your servant. I want nothing from you. I am your servant. So this is the platform of pure devotional service. There isn't other desire. There's no other motivation. In the very beginning of the Nectar Devotion, Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, the very famous verse of Anyabhilasha Shunyam, it talks about the nature of pure devotional service. And it's described that as without desire other than the service of Lord Krishna, or without any material desire. So it's not for material benefit or material profit that we perform devotional service. And in Srimad Bhagavatam 1:26, our first canto, first chapter, verse 26, says, this devotional service is described as a haitukhiya priyata, service which is unmotivated and uninterrupted. Unmotivated. So we don't do this for money, particularly. We don't do it for some material reward. In fact, those material rewards are quite small. If you ever saw what any devotees who are doing full-time work, what their salaries are, most of us would think, how in the world do they even live on that? So it's not for material reward, you know. But it's out of love. It's out of service. And in fact, we actually ask for more service. Continually more service. That is our great benefit. There's a story Tamal Krishna Goswami tells on one of the memory tapes. He said once, I think he was in Mumbai or somewhere, he was working very, very hard, you know, just like so much anxiety and trying to keep everything together, not enough money, not enough manpower the way it usually is. He was gone. He just couldn't take it anymore. He told Prabhupada, I can't do this anymore. It's just too much. And he said, Prabhupada told him, we should pray for this situation to be so constantly engaged in Krishna's service that Maya cannot find any means to enter. This is fortunate. So to be so busy with service, Prabhupada said, you're fortunate. You know? And I often, once in a while, I had to remind myself when I was doing GBC work and sometimes I was on all these committees and doing all these things, and sometimes I felt very overwhelmed and like there was always so much to do and everything. And I had to remind myself that we are chanting the Hare Krishna mantra 25,000 words a day. We are chanting a Hare Krishna mantra and asking Radha and Krishna for service. We're saying, please Radha, please Krishna, please engage me in your devotional service. So we're asking Krishna to let us serve. And so if he gives us a lot of service, we should be thankful, right? Not resentful. And so I had to remind myself that, you know, one is very fortunate if he has a lot of service or she has a lot of service. It's a good thing. And if we don't have any service, we should find some service. There's always service. There's no situation in the world where one cannot serve Krishna. Because one can always hear, chant, remember Krishna, the basic principles of Krishna consciousness. Now, another slightly different angle on this is in the material world, most people don't really enjoy their work. And you're fortunate if you do. If you find something you really like to do, you're fortunate. You know, like, I always, to make a living, I was a college professor, teacher. And I always thought, well, I like doing this because it's something I kind of like to do, it pays pretty well, and I don't have to work very hard at it. You know, so that's fine, you know, I can do it. In other words, it doesn't deviate my mind from my real business of Krishna consciousness that much. You know, and it was, it's not that we should hate our work. No. If one is actually properly engaged, one can work well and one can find a way of using that in Krishna consciousness. But one also understands that devotees derive their greatest pleasure from devotional service. First in the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's 1854, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, 1854. Okay, 1854. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nishochati Nakanchati Samasarvesha Bhuteshu Vandaktim Labhate Puran. One who is thus transcendently situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So this word Prasanatma, joyful, is used. That one is fully satisfied in oneself through devotional service. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the devotee in Krishna consciousness has nothing for which to lament or desire. Since God is full, a living entity who is engaged in God's service in Krishna consciousness becomes also full in himself. He is just like a river cleansed of all dirty water. Because a pure devotee has no thought other than Krishna, he's naturally always joyful. He does not lament or have any material loss or aspire for gain because he's full in the service of the Lord. He has no desire for material enjoyment because he knows that every living entity is a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and therefore eternally a servant. So this is the joyful position of Krishna consciousness. The one who is an advanced devotee, of course, this is talking about one in the Brahma-Bhuta state, one who is very advanced, who understands Brahman, at least that one is not the body, understands that when one is engaged in one's constitutional position of service to Krishna, then he becomes happy. There's that natural pleasure that arises within the heart. And it's there. It's right there waiting for us. It's not something abstract or esoteric, wait till, go to heaven at the end of life or something like that. I mean, it's very, very real that we can appreciate and we can understand Krishna within our heart, even in this lifetime, by the process of hearing and chanting Krishna's names. And when we do begin a little glimmer, it doesn't have to be full realization even that we're pure necessarily, but a little glimmer of understanding of Krishna and Krishna's name and how Krishna is non-different from his name, we become happy. We become joyful. We become free from anxiety and care. This is something we can experience very easily in Krishna consciousness. Okay? So, joyfulness. Our devotional service brings us this happiness. Not like this is something miserable and I can't wait for the weekend so I can stop working. No. No. Oh, good. It's weekend. I don't have to chant my rounds. No. No. Wouldn't that be... That'd seem very strange, wouldn't it? Of course not. No. We want to always engage in Krishna consciousness. Another interesting point, I thought, when I was thinking about Labor Day and the difference between material work and spiritual devotional service, is that Labor Day arose from an adversarial relationship between labor and management. In other words, there's this tension. There still is tension to some degree. And it's always there, I think, between those in labor and those in management, the bosses and the workers. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada today said, no one wants to be a servant, everyone wants to be master. That's a fact, isn't it? Everybody wants to be, nobody wants to be the servant of somebody else. Everybody wants to be on top. Nobody wants to be underneath. Now, what is we have an expression we often use, what would you call it? A descriptive term for one who does not like that others have more than they have. We call that person has envy, right? Envy within the heart. In other words, someone has something that I don't have. Someone has a better position. Someone has more money. Somebody has more talent. Someone has more education, more strength, beauty, any of the opulences. I become envious when someone else has something more than I do, or I have to serve another. Now that is the exact opposite of devotional service. Devotional service is based upon mutual love and service. That is bhakti. One of my favorite non-devotee quotes is from Khalil Gibran and the Prophet, where he said, work is love made visible. Work is love made visible. If work is love made visible, we can see love is sort of an abstract concept in the heart, but we can see it in a concrete way through service, through work or service, he's saying. So work is love made visible. I think that's a devotional principle as well. So where there is not bhakti, relationships will always have some envy. Right? Relationships will tend to be impure, have all sorts of difficulties, all sorts of problems, unless there is devotional service there at the core. Unless Krishna's at the center, there's always going to be some difficulties. The closer we are to selfless love, there is no envy. And the closer we are to selfless love, the more that is close to spiritual love. That's what spiritual love is. It means no envy, selflessness. Prabhupada gave a material example. He said, in this material world, the closest thing that we can see to pure love is the love between a mother and their child. Right? Because the mother doesn't really expect much reward. The mother works hard, does anything, will do anything for her children. Maybe she gets some reciprocation, maybe not. Doesn't matter, unconditionally loves the child, right? For the most part. Of course, it's Kali Yuga now. Doesn't always happen. Other things happen we don't want to talk about, But the idea is there, that basically this unconditional love is seen between a mother and child. And of course, the prototype of that was Mother Yashoda and Krishna. That's where we see the original loving Vatsalya Rasa, And so we have some reflection of that in our relationships here in the material world. And the reason that's the closest to a spiritual relationship, even though it may just be material and the people may not even be devotees, is because of this selflessness. because one does not expect return, but just loves unconditionally. That is what spiritual love is. Spiritual love is unconditional love, where one does not expect anything necessarily in return. One just has this deep love, and one expresses that love. And one thing to be very clear upon about, this love is reciprocal. It's not just that the devotee, I love Krishna unconditionally, he can do anything, he is all-powerful, he is the master, I may get nothing. No, Krishna reciprocates also with unconditional love for the devotees. I just finished rereading Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and it's just amazing that Sanatana Goswami, the way he talks so much about this relationship between Krishna and the Vrajavasis, the residents of Vrindavan. He has spent so much time about the loving relationship, how they are completely just sold out, totally in love with Krishna, and he is the same with them. It's said that Krishna can give anything. He can give material benediction quite easily. It's nothing for him. He owns everything. Yeah, you want this, you want that, sure, I can make 50 million more. But what he doesn't give so freely is pure devotional service. Why doesn't he give pure devotional service so easily? Who can say? I know you know that. He is sold, yes. Exactly, because he said, because I then become the property of my devotee. In other words, if somebody purely loves me, I am completely theirs. I have to give myself to them. You know, and he's not going to do that so easily unless the person has, you know, really pure heart. You know, so, but this is the wonderful exchange that happens between Krishna and his pure devotees. You know, and we see the best manifestation of it. Well, we can see it in so many ways because Krishna has unlimited variegated energies. He has unlimited incarnations. He has different ways of pleasing so many different devotees. He incarnates as Rama and Lord Nrsimhadev and so many different incarnations to please so many devotees. And he has millions of devotees in Vaikuntha where they worship him in awe and reverence. Millions and millions of wonderful devotees, all pure devotees, all relishing Krishna prema in different ways. But the, you could say, I hate to even use the word highest, we could say perhaps one of the sweetest, I think that's safe to say, one of the sweetest manifestations of that pure love between Krishna and his devotees is in Goloka Vrindavan. And that's where in Goloka Vrindavan we find Krishna playing with the coward boys, dancing with the gopis, being the wonderful, charming son of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, and all of the different relationships. And not just that, relationship I think it's in the Venu Gita, when the gopis are talking about the relationships of all the different living entities, they talk about Krishna's relationship with the rivers, with the flowers, with the trees, with the bushes, you know, with the mountains. Every clouds, it starts with the cloud. That's the first one, right? First one with the clouds. You know, and what is the cloud? Is the cloud serve Krishna? When he sees, right, Krishna, when the cloud sees that Krishna is very warm and hot playing with his friends, he goes over Krishna and makes a cooling shade for him. You know, and the cloud becomes joyful. By the way, when we say the clouds are joyful, remember that in the spiritual world, everything is conscious. There's no dead matter. Dead matter does not exist. Everything is conscious. Everything is Chintamani. Everything is pure spiritual energy. Everything is Satchitananda. Eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That's the basic building blocks of everything in the spiritual world. So the clouds are alive. The trees are alive. Sometimes they say that when Krishna plays his flute, the immobile creatures become mobile and the mobile become immobile. In other words, the trees actually get up, you know, on the roots and dance around, you know. Find some of those old Disney cartoons. Never mind. That's another thing. But you know, it's like sometimes people get these, I think, reflections of what the spiritual world is, and they, anyway, and the mole become immobile. In other words, some of the animals and people just become stunned. So, in other words, so all of these things are going on: conscious, loving relationships between Krishna and his devotees. So this has nothing, as you can see, this isn't work. This isn't labor. This is love. Devotional service is all based upon love and loving relationship. So, as we said, that pure relationship can be there when there is no envy, when it's pure. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita 9.1, Krishna says to Arjuna, he says, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge." Arjuna's qualification was he was anasuyave, non-envious. Because he wasn't envious. He purely loved Krishna as his pure friend, his cousin, his master, his everything. So therefore, he says, "Yes, I will give you complete, full, confidential knowledge. I will impart it to you because we have this relationship." So, of course, the opposite of envy is the service attitude. And devotees have a desire to serve, not just to serve Krishna, but to serve everyone, to serve other devotees. It's not, you know, popular often to say, Krishna is never alone. It's not like we go to the spiritual world and there's just me and Krishna and nobody else, you know, like somehow, you know, we're floating there in the sky and it's just me and God. No. We're there with all these relationships and, you know, all sorts of living entities and all sorts of jiva-powered boys and trees and everything. You know, and they're all in relationships. They're all related and all in, and actually, some of the greatest devotees are those that serve other devotees. We think of who are the greatest devotees in our Gaudiya Vaishnava line? Who are the first ones we think of, the greatest devotees in our line? Well, talking about Jivas. Or, I mean, you know what I mean. Well, let's just say the six Goswamis. Would that be safe to say? The six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Now, what is their eternal sarup, their constitutional position? When they're in Goloka Vrindavan, they're Manjaris. They're Manjari Gopis. Manjaris are those gopis that serve other gopis. You know, that serve Lalita, Mishak, and Radharani. In other words, these are like the greatest devotees in our line who write incredible philosophy. Deep, deep philosophy that sometimes you read Jiva Goswami, you have to read a paragraph three times, at least me, my dull mind, I have to understand it fully. They are serving the gopis. Whether making flower garlands or helping them, so it's just amazing. This is the service attitude of devotees, of servant, becoming servant of the servant. In fact, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught this as one of his most important principles, that we must first, this I'm reading, Srila Prabhupada says, we must first become a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised and showed by his own example that a living entity should always desire to be servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. Gopi bhartu parakamalayor dasana dasana das. This means that one must accept his spiritual master who comes in the descendant succession and is servant of the servant and the servant of the Lord. Under his direction, one then engages one's body, mind, and words. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam 6.11.25. So this idea of becoming a servant of the servant, not just that we serve Krishna, but we serve Krishna's servants and serve the servants of Krishna's servants. It becomes even more glorious. And Krishna appreciates that so much. Krishna appreciates those who serve his devotees. In fact, Lord Krishna says to Arjuna in the Adi Purana, "My dear Partha, one who claims to be my devotee is not so. Only a person who claims to be the devotee of my devotee is actually my devotee." The Krishna is very clear on this is the way to please him. And in the Padma Purana, Lord Shiva tells Parvati, there are different, this is from the Nectar Devotion, chapter 12, there are different methods of worship, and of all such methods, the worship of the Supreme Person is considered to be the highest. Okay? Worship of Krishna is the highest. But even higher than the worship of the Lord is the worship of the Lord's devotees. Okay? And Srila Prabhupada gave us such wonderful examples of everything. He showed us as the Acharya of how one does this. This is, of course, a famous quote from Srila Prabhupada on the occurrence of the disappearance day of his guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. He says, "Anyway, it is by his grace I was forced to give up my family life, and he brought me some way or another through preaching his gospel. What he directed, I am trying a little bit." Now he's talking to his disciples. He says, you are all helping me, so I have to thank you so much. You are actually representatives of my Guru Maharaj because you are helping me and executing the order of my Guru Maharaj. Thank you very much. This is an amazing example of the humility of the pure devotee. That Srila Prabhupada is thanking his disciples as representative of his Guru Maharaj because we were doing some little tiny bit of assistance in his mission, spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement all over the world. But then this is not a false humility. This is the actual deep, deep realization of a pure devotee, of an Uttama Adhikari. Uttama Adhikari is saying, everyone is serving Krishna, but perhaps me. I'm not serving so well. Everyone else is serving nicely. And then giving special recognition to those who are doing a little bit of service to encourage them. So this was this is part of the amazing reciprocation. That same reciprocation exerted in Krishna's devotees between the devotees and the spiritual master. It's very, very similar. I'm not exactly the same, but it's a similar mood of devotional service. Service to the guru, service to God, really has the same result. Because Krishna accepts one's service to one's spiritual master as service to him. In fact, that's the system. Krishna instructs us. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Right? Render service unto him. So we want to associate favorably with devotees. We want to serve the devotees nicely. We want to always remember them. Another point I wanted to make is that service to Krishna and the devotees begins with practical engagement of the senses. In the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada says, endeavor executed with intelligence and Krishna consciousness is called utsaha, or enthusiasm. The execution of devotional service is not a matter of idle meditation, but practical action in the foreground of spiritual life. Okay. So it has to be something practical. Sadhana is a practice. Sadhana is not just a mental, theoretical idea. It's a practice. Practice of bhakti, practice of service, right? And so there needs to be a good balance between one's active service and one's sadhana, one's hearing and chanting. These are two tracks of service that are in sadhana, hearing and chanting, and they run parallel, and they mutually reinforce one another. In other words, engagement in Krishna consciousness brings one closer to Krishna and results in wanting us to increase our hearing and chanting, and as one increases hearing and chanting, one increases the desire to serve. And so there's so many opportunities to serve. You can hear announcements every morning, Mukhi will tell you how you can serve, do some service. There are so many opportunities that are there, and everyone should take those opportunities. And even though it's difficult now in our current situation, there's so many virtual opportunities for hearing and chanting and associating with devotees. We should try to take advantage of these things. And one thing to think about service, especially as many of us are becoming more and more aware as we get older, at least my generation, many of us are getting older, many of us are not so well perhaps, perhaps have different illnesses, and we probably can't do as much active service as we used to. But remember what the 9 processes of devotional service. What are the first 3? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. Everyone can do those. Hearing, chanting, remembering. If you could do nothing else and you're just laying in bed as a total invalid, you could be remembering Krishna. You could be hearing about Krishna. You could be chanting in your mind at least. You know, yeah, it's interesting. I remember one thing Sanatana Goswami said. He was talking about chanting, which Sanatana Goswami says of all processes, Kirtanam, especially Sankirtan Jagat, he says it's most important because that's the Yuga Dharma. In fact, he says, Kirtanam is so important that even a materialistic person can go back to Goloka Vrindavan through taking up the process of Kirtanam. You know, it's that powerful. So, where was I going with this? Okay, so, this hearing and chanting, remembering, I said, I know, he was saying, some people say that chanting in one's mind, mental chanting is better than chanting aloud because if you're old and invalid and you weren't able to, you know, then you could always chant in your mind. And Sananda Goswami says very clearly, he says, but we have not seen this. Remember, I mean, he lived to 90 years old, he says, we haven't seen this. We find devotees are always able to chant somehow or another. Krishna gives them the ability to chant. So he was not in favor of this idea of mental chanting only. He thought we should chant aloud, at least moving the lips. That's what Prabhupada always say that, at least move the lips, even if you can't chant loudly for some whatever physical reason, at least move the lips, and be enunciating the words. Because when we do, Prabhupada said, Krishna is dancing on our tongue. The holy name and Krishna are non-different. And Krishna is there in his name. And that becomes revealed to us more and more. And that's something that we can always do that service. And the other service that's so important is Shravanam, hearing. And Mukhi was just saying that this is our International Shravanam Week. Which, in other words, everyone, it's an attempt to encourage all the devotees to increase their reading of books, particularly Srila Prabhupada's books. So, again, just take every opportunity to try to hear this philosophy, deeply go into it, absorb it. And that becomes impetus then for chanting and service. So it's a mutually reinforcing process, and we will find that ourselves becoming more and more joyful in our execution of devotional service. We won't see it as a job or a task or labor, but as a pure, loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Spiritual Master. Thank you very much. I think we're out of time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Question? Comment? My question is, you said we should try to become servant of the Lord. My question is, if that servant of the Lord can also become a conjugal lover, in the sense, and why I'm, it's easy to say yes, but what I'm saying is, because in the real world, that is something is not considered good thing. So how do we relate these two things, have a like a relation with the...
Oh, in the material world it's considered.
Because in the material...
How to say this? It's described in the Bhagavad Gita in the verse about the banyan tree. How the material world is like a banyan tree. That is a reflection. The material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And a reflection in a pond, everything's reversed. What's on top is on bottom. So what may seem to be the highest in the spiritual world may be lowest and vice versa. So this relationship with, as a paramour, that was trying with the gopis who are married, young women, with their families, having this amorous relationship with Krishna, sneaking out in the middle of the night, it's totally against Vedic civilization, completely against the normal rules and regulations of religious life, of dharmic life. It actually increased that love. It made it that much more powerful because the gopis were willing to this. They're willing to give up their reputations, to give up their good standing in the community, to give up everything. This made it that much more, And of course, because everyone there is a devotee of Krishna. They're ultimately all in some different rasa and relationship with Krishna. And so everybody is enjoying it. I was kind of wondering about this. But I actually was reading in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Sananda Goswami said that even the husbands of the gopis are actually, they all have a relationship. As older as gopas, they have a relationship with Krishna also, and they love Krishna. So it's not like, even though they don't know this is going on, it's not like, they don't get... No, they also get the benefit of whatever their loss and loving relationship with Krishna is. So everybody does. And so, that's the difference. In the material world, somebody like... There's always winners and losers, And if you have relationships and you have people sneaking out and people, having affairs, it's awful, usually. Usually it becomes terrible. Somebody loses. In the spiritual world, everybody wins. Everybody gains. Everyone is happy. Everyone is more satisfied. And mainly this is a very, very high relationship. It's very hard. It's hard to understand.
You know, it's hard for any of us to understand with our material minds particularly, but it increases this love to such a fine point, to such a deep, deep way of this total selfless love. It's just, you know, I find the best thing for me, I don't always understand it perfectly, to be honest with you. I find if I hear a lot about it, I read the Bhagavatam, I read these descriptions by Prabhupada and Acharyas, they become more clear. There's some very nice purports in the Krishna book and in the 10th canto that explain a lot of these things, you know, really well. And some of the subtleties behind them, too. Anyway. Anything else? Okay, I think we're past time here. Jai Agoy Shri Prabhupada.